you hear me, Madam Chair?
We can. One moment. We're passing out a slide that you've provided for us labeled North Slope Oil Production with OCS.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. My name is Jim Fikes. I live east of Palmer, and I followed the oil industry and state policy for a long time. I'd like to thank the committee for its work on some really good ideas that are emerging. On the good side, I think that the committee substitute might work with a couple of changes I'd like to recommend. One is to reduce the GRE rate below 20% and cap it at 5 or 6 years. And I believe that the net operating loss interest rate also needs to be reduced substantially as well. These are, I believe, this part of the bill works, this bill works really good for new areas of development. However, I believe SB 21 needs to be carefully done to make sure the state doesn't give away the maximum profits it should share as oil companies continue making their maximum profits on the legacy fields. Prudhoe, Kuparuk, and Alpine still remain some of the safest and most reliable and most profitable oil extraction areas in the world, and I expect they're going to stay that way for the next 30 or 40 years, and those fields should continue with the ACES tax regimes. I think that there needs to be a difference in the way the fields are treated. The slide I sent the committee projecting offshore production that's going to happen in 8, 9, 10 years will put a lot of oil into taps, and I think that there's been a lot of concern about throughput. Everybody would like to see more, but there will be more, almost as much as there was in 1988. And I just would like to note that 2 million barrels a day were going through taps in 1988, but the state made less than $1 billion. The next year, we're projected to make $4.3 billion from the less than one quarter of that amount of oil. So it really is about price, not throughput, and it really is about price, not so much taxes. And I would recommend John Miller's book, The Last Barrel, who makes that case very clearly. So please ask how much state revenue will be lost by SB 21, how much production would be required to offset those losses, and how do we make sure that we benefit from oil at our at fair value? In other words, we deserve to tax our oil at full value when it's taken out, not just hope that we're going to get more later based on promises which may or may not materialize. So thank you very much. I hope that we will continue to figure out ways to enhance our current situation, but I guess the bottom line is we're never going to be able to lower our tax rates enough to stop oil booms elsewhere in the world, just like none of the other oil areas in the world could lower their tax rates to keep Alaska oil from booming in the late 70s and early 80s. So best of luck, and please take these things into consideration, and if you have any questions, I'll try and answer them.
Jim, thank you for your testimony. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Jim, if you have any written comments for the committee, if you could forward those to Senator Meyer's office, that would be helpful.
Thank you very much. I will do that.
Thank you very much. With that, we will start in the LIO in Anchorage. We'll take a few people from there, and then we'll move to another. So we're going to try to make sure that different LIOs across the state are able to get in without having to wait for the full completion, if I have the support of the committee to do that. Seeing the support in the Anchorage LIO, first up, Keith Silver. Keith, are you with us?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Keith, if you would state your name and affiliation, you have 3 minutes to present your public testimony.
To the committee, Madam Chair, and best committee, my name is Keith Silver. I'm representing myself, business in Anchorage, Alaska. I keep my comments brief and to help allow other people to speak. A couple of things. I've got, you know, a whole bunch of bullet points, but others will get to that. But one of them that I thought was most important is that Alaska has the highest cost and tax rates in the nation. Our corporate capital is limited, and only the most profitable projects in the company's portfolio will be funded. Clearly, other investors are now taking their money where they can get a greater return. So we need a new policy that encourages long-term planning and investment in new production in Alaska. And I'd like to make another comment here. It does matter how much throughput is run through the pipeline just for practical operations matter. And we're within a couple, maybe 100,000 or 200,000 barrels a day of reaching that practical limit. I thank you for your folks' time and look forward to listening to the other testimony.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Silver. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you. Next up, Steve Pratt at the Anchorage LIO. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. My name is Steve Pratt, Executive Director of Consumer Energy Alliance Alaska. We're a group bringing the consumer's voice to energy issues in Alaska and actually around the nation. We do believe that the greatest economic threat to Alaska right now is declining TAPS throughput as spending increases. Americans have a direct interest in obtaining competitively priced domestic energy, we believe. We also have a direct interest in robust economic activity to maintain livelihoods, and at least 30% of working Alaskans are dependent upon oil and gas exploration and development for employment. Unfortunately, as noted previously, as oil prices have increased, Alaska oil production has declined from a peak of over 2 million barrels a day to a little over 500,000 barrels, and it's in free fall at the rate of 5 to 7% per year. 2 weeks ago, Adam Simensky, he's a presidential appointee with the U.S. Department of Energy, gave CEA a presentation on the U.S. government's draft 2013 energy outlook, and frankly, Madam Vice Chair, it was a disappointment. Alaska's contribution to the nation's energy supply will continue to decline without a change in state and federal policies. Increased prices and new technologies have resulted in substantial increases in oil production in other locations around the United States, but not in Alaska, and not because more oil is not there. We simply need to be more competitive. A sustainable increase of TAPS throughput to 50% of its capacity, 1 million barrels a day, would add $18 billion per year to overall U.S. economic activity, Madam Vice Chair. It can also reduce the export of $18 billion U.S. consumer dollars per year to OPEC nations and help keep the men and women at J-Bear out of harm's way. Increased economic activity will benefit all Alaskans, Madam Vice Chair. In closing, I'll simply note that something is terribly wrong here, and I thank you and members of the Senate Finance Committee for taking a look at this, for investigating, and for bringing fixes to the table immediately. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pratt. There are no questions from committee members. Next up, Brendan Babb. Brendan, your testimony, name and affiliation for the record.
Hi, I'm Brendan Babb, and I'm speaking for myself. Thank you very much for this opportunity, and thank you for all your hard work on this complex issue. I was born in Fairbanks, and I've lived in Alaska most of my life. I like to imagine being in a large oil company top-level meeting where people are pitching different ideas, different oil fields for investment, and one person can suggest an oil field that would result in $2 billion a year profit. There wouldn't be any capital lead time to build the field. You'd start getting profits the next year. You wouldn't increase the risk of oil spills or deaths or injuries on the oil fields. All you'd have to do was invest $2 to $4 million influencing Alaskans and the legislature to reduce the tax rate, which is what I feel this does. I feel like I'm all for reducing the tax rates, but only after the oil companies have produced more. We're dealing with some of the most profitable industries in the world. They're incredibly smart. Everything they're doing is legal. I think the people that negotiate for the oil companies are probably getting bored. They need to have, you know, a more challenging negotiation, and I think Alaska is the group to do that, to help them get more of a challenge. Because basically, if we lower the rate, they can get a profit of $2 billion a year on a $2 million investment. That's 1,000 times return on investment. That's 100,000% return on investment. And you get that not next year, not just next year, but for the 9 following years. Also, there's been a lot of mention of throughput. If I give you a glass of water and a straw and you're drinking through the straw, eventually the throughput will go down. The oil field has been declining since 1988. ACEs hasn't caused the decline. We have record high employment up on the slope. Sadly, 50% of it is for people outside of Alaska. I'd like to see incentives that you could make to change that. But basically, I think we should keep ACES the same way it is. It's doing really well, unless we can make changes that reduce taxes once we get to production. Otherwise, it's like having a teenager that never takes out the trash and having him come and ask to raise his allowance by $1 billion, and he's pretty sure he will start taking out the trash then. Thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Babb, thank you for joining us today. Next before the committee, out of the Anchorage LIO, Scott Thorson. Scott, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
We can. Your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Scott Thorson. I'm here representing myself. I own a small business in Anchorage, and I just opened a branch down in North Dakota. The competitive situation between Anchorage and North Dakota is, as an Alaskan, I've been here 40 years, and as an Alaskan, it's really scary. When I tell people down there that the total government take is somewhere around 80% on a $100 barrel of oil, they can't believe that there's that much government take going on up here, and it's certainly not that way down there. Not only are our taxes out of line, our competitive situation is really challenging right now. On the North Slope, if somebody wants to put an oil well up, you know, it'll take them 10 years to get the permits, and it'll cost them $35 or $40 million before they're producing oil with it. Down in North Dakota, it's a pretty simple process because the land's privately owned. There's no involvement by the EPA. It's a simple process of getting a couple of permits from the state and making a deal with the landowner. They put an oil well up, and within 6 months, they're producing oil with it. And it costs about $3.5, maybe $4 million to do that. Now, granted, a producing well in North Dakota doesn't produce the volume that an Alaskan well does, but it's certainly not a 10x difference. So not only is our tax situation completely uncompetitive, the high cost of doing business, the difficulty of getting access to the resource, and several other factors all add up to make Alaska pretty non-competitive right now. The only thing that we can control, certainly at the state level, is the tax environment. You can't really control the distance to market and the cost of getting federal permits or any of those other things. But we really need to do whatever we can do at the state level to make ourselves more competitive. It's a really frightening scenario that we're looking at right now. So anyway, those are my comments. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Thorson, thank you for joining us. With that, we'll move to the Fairbanks LIO, Jim Plackett. Jim, are you with us?
Can you hear me, Madam Chairman?
We can.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to thank you and the committee members for all your hard work you've been doing on this important issue for Alaskans. My name is Jim Plackey. I'm the Fairbanks Event and Membership Coordinator for the Alliance and also a proud member of the Opera Engineers Local 302. I've been a member for 39 years. I agree with Governor Parnell that the state legislature must act this year to address production taxes in order to spur oil industry investment. The government take remains too high under ACES. It encourages a harvest mode that realizes short-term gain for the state at the expense of increased long-term production and revenue. We know there are billions of barrels of oil remaining on the North Slope fields. However, it will be challenging and expensive to develop, and some of it will require new technology. Today's historically high oil prices should be spurring the investments needed to produce more oil. Yet, we are not seeing this type of increased investments on the North Slope that have led to a new boom in oil production elsewhere. For example, in Texas, 830 active drilling rigs, Alaska 6 wells drilling rigs, North Dakota 174, Alaska 6, Oklahoma 183, Alaska 6, Pennsylvania 80, Alaska 6. The single biggest reason is that ACES tax increase passed in 2007 has stifled investments. Under ACEs, high oil prices do not incentivize new investment, and Alaska is losing out as a result. If our government take remains so high that Alaska continues to deter investment to other energy jurisdictions, we are only harming ourselves by guaranteeing an accelerated oil production decline, which we're having now. The oil industry will simply invest in other places like they do now. Alaska should be open and ready for business and willing to provide a regulatory and tax climate in which the industry can reinvest back into Alaska. However, I'm optimistic that as long as we make production of oil and gas in Alaska economical, we will attract the oil industry like any for-profit corporation. We'll aggressively pursue development of new and older fields in Prudhoe. Alaskans are blessed to have a world-class oil fields, so let's stay in the game and compete fiercely for investment dollars in our North Slope fields. Thank you for letting me testify, Madam Chair.
Thank you for joining us, Jim. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, still remaining at the Fairbanks LAO, Rich Seifert. Rich, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Madam Chairman.
Your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Richard Seifert, and I'm here as a citizen, and I hope I'm representing some other citizens. I'm also a former professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm a professor emeritus now. I'd just like to start by saying I've heard a lot of claims by a lot of people that ACES has caused a decline and that the tax regime has caused a decline in production. I have published some of the state's data, and I know that, as has been mentioned here, that the decline has been going on continuously and very naturally and expectedly. Since 1988, and I would maintain that unless other production comes online, these are the major four fields that we'll ever have. That's the easiest oil we'll ever get. The expectation of a decline is totally natural, and I don't think ACES has a lot to do with it. I think one of the things I want to focus on, probably the only thing I want to focus on with the time I have, is that a lot of the cases that are trying to be made by the governor and the legislature at this point, and the decisions that are being made, would have been made much easier if we had simply been auditing the process and exercising due diligence in oversight and accounting for the production. The promises that are being made that this changes in the tax regime will develop oil production and increase oil production, there's no way to know that the investment that's going to be made is at all worthy, because we have not been making the efforts and investing, which I think is a better investment than a tax credit, in auditing exactly what the production is, what the production costs are by each company, so that we know what the expectation of a tax credit will be. I say spend $500 million auditing Alaska's oil production system with the best auditors we can contract, and then, and only then, you'd know what to do with the improved production. Now you can't possibly know if the expenditure should be worthwhile, because you don't really know what's driving the production. And that's what I think is needed now. If you invest money in good data, you know what your tax incentives are going to be, and I don't think you have it. And I think the governor would make a better case, and the people would believe the case much better if you had good audit data. Thank you.
Richard, thank you for joining us. Now we'll move over to the Homer LAO, Brad Faulkner. Brad, are you with us?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brad Faulkner. I'm 55 years old, lifelong Alaskan. Started working on the pipeline as a kid. Worked in and off the field in a number of positions, and have made living off of oil off and on for a good part of my life. I am completely opposed to giving additional tax breaks to new oil pools found in legacy fields. part of the strategy of the oil companies, way back when I was the maintenance scheduling supervisor for Sohio before BP took over the field, and was privy to how the field was being managed at the time. In the eastern portion of the field, untapped as of today is a 600 million barrel pool of oil, which will be easily accessed and has all sorts of infrastructure around it. So to give a break, to a tax break for oil that has been sitting in the ground for over 40 years and it's been warehoused simply to be able to keep the pipeline full as the field declined, and we all naturally knew it would decline. But this oil is sitting there untapped, and to make a decision on this without the information that your reservoir engineers have, the BP reservoir engineers have, and I'm sure the state people must have it somewhere, even though they wouldn't be able to testify to it because they're not allowed to testify about it. But you're operating in the dark until you're looking at the various pools of oil that are there to be tapped. I know under the ELF, 81% of the oil leaving Parrot and Prudhoe had no production tax. That's hard to believe. And when Frank Murkowski got into office, what he did was call all the Prudhoe structure one field. I think it was one of the best things that he did while in office. I see I'm timed out. Thank you very much for my time.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Faulkner. Are there questions from committee members? Remaining in Homer, Wes Newcomb. Wes, are you with us?
Oops. Wes Newcomb, Anchor Point. 80 years old. I came up here because of Nafton Gap, because my industry was shut down because of the United States being shut down. And the main thing I'm concerned about is we have about one out of five people are state employees. We have large numbers of people that we support, and if our oil production declines, I wonder how we're going to support this, because all these things are supported by oil right now, including our natives, which need a lot of income, need a lot of money. We've got a lot of expenses, and if we don't figure out how to knock those taxes down and get oil going and stop the Green Party, we're sunk. As a state, will that go back to what I don't know? I thank you very much for your time. Oh, by the way, I'm 80 years old. You're supposed to tell how old you are.
Mr. Newcomb, you don't have to tell us how old you are, but just your name and affiliation. We appreciate you being in Alaska, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. Questions from committee members? Next in Homer, Bob Shavelson. Bob, are you with us?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Shavelson. I'm the Executive Director of Cook and My Keeper. I'm here speaking on behalf of our roughly 1,200 members throughout Alaska. And I think our membership shares a very real concern that we're going to be giving away billions of dollars to an industry that doesn't need it, and we're basically squandering the incredible finite wealth that Alaskans have been blessed with. I want to say for a moment, we strongly support the comments put forward by Professor Seifert there. There's really been no accountability or accounting to understand the debate we're trying to have right now. And so, you know, at a very basic level, we need to get a return on our resources. We need to understand what revenues are going to be lost. And the only way we can do that is to have open books and be able to look at some of the figures over the past. We do not want to be issuing a blank check for things that we have no promise of seeing any return on. I think that flies in the face of the constitutional mandate to provide maximum benefit for our citizens. I would also say that it's very important to continue with progressivity. Alaskans deserve, because we own the oil, to get a higher return as the price of oil increases. Industry makes their profit, a very healthy profit, and it only makes sense that Alaskans should get a return when that price goes up. I want to make one quick comment about I've heard about the lack of competition and how Alaska is such an onerous place to do business. You know, in Cook Inlet, we've seen ACES bring in an incredible amount of exploration and interest here. We're seeing a renaissance in exploration and development throughout the Cook Inlet Basin. So I think all those notions that ACES is somehow quelling interest are false. So I'll wrap up and just say when you look at places like Norway, it's actually embarrassing to look at how Alaska is squandering our oil wealth, and we have an obligation not only to ourselves and our kids, but to future generations to manage these things in a way that oil wealth that we have will endure for years to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll move back to Anchorage for a bit. Carl Portman. Carl, are you with us?
Good afternoon. My name is Carl Portman, and I am the Deputy Director of the Resource Development Council, and I am here to express RDC support for meaningful oil production tax reform this session. RDC is a diverse statewide business association comprised of members from the oil and gas, mining, timber, tourism, and fishing industries. We have heard that Governor Parnell's approach to oil production tax reform is a giveaway. In our view, the real giveaway is the oil stranded in the ground because we're simply looking at maximizing short-term tax revenue at the expense of encouraging investment and new production. Consider that since 2007, we have lost over 210 million barrels per day with a gross value at point of production of over $17 billion. If a less aggressive tax regime could cut our decline rate in half, over $8 billion new dollars would be circulating in our economy. We are giving away our future for short-term and clearly unsustainable tax revenue. Some of the most vocal proponents of production tax reform among our members are from those not directly involved in the oil and gas industry. The business community is fearful what continued TAPS throughput decline will do to our economy as a whole. The governor has shown leadership in outlining his four guiding principles that we firmly support: fairness to Alaskans, encouraging new production, simplification, and durability over the long term. The discussion needs to be on how to encourage more production and a more long-term view. Taxing ourselves to prosperity is a poor strategy and will undermine the future production and the health of the private sector, which is the foundation of Alaska's economy. We remain concerned that the legislative process will result in a tax policy that is too timid and does not encourage the investment needed to stem the production decline. There is an urgent need to compete, to stem the production decline, to increase investment. We need a tax policy that makes Alaska a compelling place to invest. Alaska needs to stand out from its competitors. The resources are in the ground. All we need is the right policy to get the oil into the pipe. The committee substitute is a big step in the right direction, and it is an improvement over existing tax policy. However, we do not believe the bill goes far enough in making Alaska stand out from its competition. An average government take relative to our competition is not a good position to be in. I would encourage the committee to rely on what the consultants and the investors have told you and take to heart what they consider the strengths and weaknesses in the bill. I encourage the committee to do sufficient due diligence to ensure that the goals set out in the legislation are achieved. Thank you for your service and for the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Portman, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Questions from committee members? Seeing none, still in Anchorage, at the Anchorage LIO, Mr. Maloney, Tom Maloney, are you with us?
He is. He was just sitting in the back of the room.
Sorry, Mr. Maloney. Thank you for joining
us,
Tom.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Maloney. I'm a long-term resident of South Anchorage, and the testimony I'm providing today is personal in nature. In the fall of 2007, the resource review published by the Resource Development Council contained a quote from then-Commissioner Pat Galvin of the Department of Revenue. Mr. Galvin's quote was, "Frankly, we have not said that ACES improves the investment climate. Clearly, there is going to be a larger state share, and that isn't going to make the economics of projects better." This was a very astute observation, which is unfortunately been proven more than correct. In calendar year 2007, when ACES came into place, North Slope oil production averaged 739,000 barrels a day. Production volumes by month ranged from a low of 649,000 in September 2007 to a high of 796,000 in January 2007. How did calendar year 2012 go? In one word, terrible. Production averaged 548,000 barrels a day, which is down 191,000 a day. Just think, in five short years, production was nearly 35% higher back in 2007. In 2012 calendar year, lots of great data that the Department of Revenue furnishes, production ranged from a low of 399,000 in August to a high of 624,000 in January. There was only 2 months in 2012 that were over 600,000 barrels a day. Yes, people, production does matter. In 2012, the highest producing month was lower than the lowest producing month in 2007. I realize that I'm a CPA, CMA, and CFP, and I like a lot of data. Production matters, and these numbers are terrible. This is strictly not sustainable for a positive long-term economy for Alaska. I urge the committee to focus on the governor's guiding principles and to not be fine with production decline. The reduction of 191,000 barrels a day over the last 5 years at just $100 a barrel, I realize we've been averaging higher than that, results in a $7 billion reduction in Alaska's economy in 1 year alone. Let's change course and get Alaskans moving again. I'd just like to add that my 20-year-old son, Sam, would like to be here tonight. He's in a UAA ultrasonic class tonight. He graduates in May. And he would just like everybody to know he's had a great education up here at South and KCC. He's very proud of the education he's gotten at UAA and having 12 welding certifications and 2 radiography certifications. He'd like to stay here, but you need jobs. So keep that in mind when we're talking about things. Alaskans need jobs. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Maloney. Questions from committee members? We're going to take 2 more out of the Anchorage LIO, then we'll start back around the state. Stephanie McSwain, followed by Jim Udelhoven in Anchorage. Stephanie, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Your affiliation?
My name is Stephanie McSwain, and I'm representing myself, and this is my personal testimony. I'm a multi-generational Alaskan. I'm also a proud hockey mom of a 5-year-old, Landon. I'm an East High School graduate, and I truly believe that the oil industry has made it possible for me to have an excellent education where I received my MBA from Alaska Pacific University. I've been a recipient of the permanent fund since the first dividend was issued. These benefits have allowed me to have opportunities and have had a direct impact on my education. Currently, I am truly concerned about the rapid decline in oil production and the unlimited opportunities as a result of this decline. I would truly like my 5-year-old son, Landon, to have the benefits equal to or greater than the opportunities that I received. I'm concerned that friends are moving to North Dakota, Alberta, and Texas to follow the oil industry. In honor of the Iditarod, let's be a lead dog again, and let's get Alaska moving forward. Thank you.
Stephanie, thank you for joining us today. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Jim Udelhoven, are you there? Anchorage LIO.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Jim Udelhoven, and I want to thank you, Madam Vice Chair and the Senate Committee, for taking time to hear us today. I'm representing Udelhoven Oilfield Services, which is an oil field service company that I started up in 1970 as a single employee. A few years ago, we reached 900 employees. And there was a lot of decisions made during those years, and there was a lot of good employees brought on, and we didn't do a lot of studies to make those decisions. And we have a family-owned corporation. All the shareholders in the corporation are employees. A few years ago, when the rush came to go to North Dakota, we didn't go there. I mean, it was my belief that Alaska would get the tax structure changed and this thing would turn around and we would be able to survive and keep most of our employees in Alaska. About a year ago, I changed my mind on that, and we went into the shale fields, and we're taking employees from Alaska now down into the Eagle Ford shale field south of San Antonio in Texas. We are now negotiating contracts in North Dakota. We went to Texas because we had enough of the cold on the North Slope. We thought we'd go for a little bit of change. But anyway, we're making moves there now. I think part of what really crossed my mind and I spent a lot of time thinking on is me and Ray Latcham and a few other people here in Alaska put together the Articles of Incorporation for Arctic Power in the 80s. We traveled all over the country trying to get Anwar open. It never, never did happen. The clock is really ticking now on whether we can actually do a tax change. Every year that we don't do it, and it's very necessary to do it, but every year that we don't do it, it gets harder to do. And I'm not sure that we will come up with meaningful tax change this year. And I've really got to look after my employees. They've looked after me. Alaska has been very good to me. The oil industry is where I started my business. I think the state has the numbers that they can take and work through this thing. I think the wisdom is there, and I'm just hopeful that it will happen, but it has to be meaningful, and it really needs to be this year, not next year. Thank you very much.
Mr. Gittle-Holdman, thank you for joining us in your work in Alaska. Are there questions from committee members? Moving off net, Philip Furbush. Philip, are you with us?
Yes.
Your name?
Can you hear me?
We can. Your name and affiliation for the record. Thank you for joining us.
I'm Philip Furbush, and I represent myself from the Palmer area, Matsu. Alaska doesn't have a production problem. What Alaska has is a lack of economic diversity and a spending problem. Economy is based on extracting and spending our non-renewable resources. We are spending about $18,000 per year per capita. We are not adding value to these non-renewable resources. We are not investing in the replacement of these non-renewable resources. We are just extracting and spending our non-renewable resources without much regard for future generations. This is unsustainable. Our non-renewable resources will run out. Alaskans have already extracted and spent most of our most lucrative non-renewable resource and are now desperately trying to figure out a way to spend billions so we can extract our non-renewable resources faster so we can keep on spending. Instead of spending billions of dollars to extract faster, we need to start investing in sustainable economy. We need to invest in hydropower and other alternatives so that we do not burn our gas and oil for energy and will have power to provide when oil and gas is gone. We need a petrochemical industry so we can add value to and get more out of our non-renewable resource. Maybe we should look at what Norway is doing. They have hydropower and not spending much of their or burning much of their oil and gas for energy. So they do not have, they have about 15 times as much savings account as the state of Alaska does. This generation of Alaska uses our renewable resources wisely. We could build an economic base for the future generations, but if we continue with extract and spend as fast as you can mentality, we may be leaving our future generations with little more than empty wells and holes in the ground. Let's invest and spend for the building the future, not just extract and spend it. Thank you.
Mr. Furbish, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll move down to the Kenai Peninsula and into the LAO. Mary, could you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, I will. Mary Tutangi, and I am a retired educator, speech-language pathologist, and I am speaking for myself. And I would like to express concern about the amount of money that is being expended on this. And as I've been listening to the other people speaking, if we're looking at $600 million or 600 million barrels of oil in present fields that could be used and have not been, it is my opinion that these assets are being held back in order to get a better deal. There are leases that have not been utilized. There are a number of other means. There's cash that has not been utilized by the oil companies who have taken out, I'm trying to remember the exact year, but it's within the last 3 years, where there was a $9 billion worth of profit taken from this state in non-renewable assets. I have concerns about that when I see that last year we would have been in the red $150 million, which is very small peanuts by comparison to the kind of money we are being asked, had the governor's plan been implemented in giving the $2.3 billion that was offered to the oil companies last year. I have concern that $20 billion is going to be offered. I do not know if it's a donation or an incentive, and whether or not there's been nothing said that has identified what the oil companies are going to be doing with the money. And yet there are many people who are preschool programs have been cut, our mental health monies have been cut. All of these things are being cut in order to provide a donation, what appears to be a donation, to oil companies who are making tremendous profits in this state. And there is not any responsible, in my mind, any responsible action being taken to offset this. Thank you.
Mary, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll head back up to Fairbanks. Paul Metz. Paul, if we could have your name and affiliation for the record.
Paul Metz, 3510 Rosie Creek Road. I'm a professor of geological engineering at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, but these are my own personal comments, and I'll reflect on the or represent any position of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. First of all, I'd like to say that I concur with the four guiding principles that the governor has put forward with respect to the tax and the production increase policy for the North Slope. I concur with the comments that were made earlier by Mr. Thorson, Mr. Plaquette, Mr. Portman, and Mr. Maloney. The state of Alaska is a very high-cost oil patch. I began my career here in 1968 when I was discovered here, and our operating costs were an order of magnitude greater than they were in the lower 48 at that time, and the situation has not changed. We don't become more competitive by also being the highest taxing jurisdiction in the industry as well. It's absolutely essential that our tax structure be adjusted to make us more competitive and the state of Alaska take whatever other action it can to make Alaska competitive with the rest of North America. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Paul. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we're going to go off net. Jerry Awanana?
Jerry Awanana, speaking for myself in Anchorage, Alaska. I would just like to say I oppose Senate Bill 21 and that the Senate should also, and the House should also oppose the bill. I believe that spending on infrastructure as opposed to spending on the capital budgets is very unbalanced. We have the most amount of open area with the least amount of infrastructure for any state in the union. I believe the big oil is strong-arming Alaska in this respect. I don't approve of their continued abuses of our legislature in this way, and our taxpayers spending amounts of money to revisit the same ACEs. And so there should be no change in ACEs. The change should be that the oil companies should have separate accounting instead of global apportionment. And I believe this is one thing that the legislature should focus on. And I thank the committee for its work and the chairman for hearing the public. You all have a great evening. I thank you guys for asking.
Jerry, thank you so much for hanging online. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll return to Juneau. Is there anyone in Juneau that would like to testify before the committee? Anyone in Juneau? Seeing none, we'll go back off net. Tom LaCoche. Tom, are you with us?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. This is Tom LaCoche speaking for myself. I'd request that the committee not pass SB 21 out of committee as it represents an Alaskan version of the federal sequester legislation, and the combination of the two will cut our budget so severely that we will never be able to recover from the economic depression that it will create, and we will never be able to diversify our economy away from an inevitable loss of the reliance on the petroleum industry to support our tax revenue. I would also state that it would have so many far-ranging implications on education, medical care, and of course we're going to need orphanages once SB 49 passes. I would hope that the committee would exercise its constitutional responsibility to consider the long-term policy for exploitation of our finite hydrocarbon resources. It is abundantly clear that interest is in direct conflict with the short-term exploitation interest of the oil companies, which developed a 2 million barrel per day pipeline that drained us of our most valuable resources. There's no doubt that the committee members would like to have about 5 billion barrels of that oil back that we sold at between, $9 and $35 a barrel, so we could sell it now at $120 a barrel. We will surely soon cross a point where our oil production is less than our petroleum product consumption. We need to have long-term production of crude oil so that we can supply our own state needs. The lack of the growing recession of the sea ice on the North Slope will soon mean that we will be able to ship our oil directly from the North Star Causeway or other deep water port we build on the North Slope. We don't have to fill that enormous pipeline that they oversized to exploit all resources in the short term. I would beg that this committee not take part in an unconstitutional consideration of only oil company short-term needs and provide for the long-term policies that will need to provide oil revenue and oil products to Alaskans over the next hundreds of years. Please do not pass this bill. Thank you very much for this opportunity to comment.
Tom, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll return to Anchorage. Kathy Duvburn. Kathy, are you there? Followed by Mike Herring.
Hi, my name is Kathy Duxbury. I am here representing myself, and I would like to take a moment to thank the committee for hearing our testimony. I want to say that I strongly support the governor in trying to get this ACES reformed. I don't understand where all these people are coming from. They're going around speaking that it's a donation to the oil companies. It certainly isn't. It's only painfully clear that ACES has not been successful. Otherwise, throughput would have been increased over the last several years since it's been in place. I have a family here. We want to be here long-term in Alaska. We're Alaskans. We have a granddaughter, and I have a son, and I hope that my granddaughter can grow up to get a job and be able to stay here. But at the current rate we're going, there will be no jobs, and there won't be an ability to stay here. She'll be moving to North Dakota or Texas or somewhere like that. It's taxing your way is taxing, overtaxing is not the way to success. We need to be competitive, and we need to take the sign down that says Alaska is not open for business, make it open for business, and have it be competitive again. Thank you.
Kathy, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, staying in Anchorage, Mike Herring, followed by Michael Jesperson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Vice Chair and the Senate committee members for allowing me to speak regarding my concerns on the ACES tax. My name is Mike Herring. I'm a project manager with over 30 years' experience in the hydrocarbon processing industry. I'm testifying on my own behalf. But I'm also proud to work for Udolvin Oilfield System Services, as Jim mentioned earlier, was founded in the Kenai Peninsula of Alaska over 40 years ago, servicing major oil and gas companies doing business in Alaska, at one point employing over 900 employees. Over the years, I have seen firsthand the ups and downs in the industry that were created by the open market supply and demand. We accept those trends as part of doing business, but it was not until the ACES that I've seen our clients pull back on capital investment in Alaska and redirect our domestic funding into more oil-friendly states like North Dakota and Texas. I fear this will result in continued loss of jobs for Alaskans. I believe that tax reform is not an option, but a necessity to ensure the future of Alaska. Thank you for your time.
Mike, thank you for joining us today. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Michael Jesperson in the Anchorage LIO, followed by Peter Machi, and then we'll move to another LIO.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Jesperson, J as in Juliet, Echo Sierra, person. I'm just a person. I don't have an engineering degree. I haven't been in the petroleum industry at all, and I'm not a PhD professor. I just have a little bit of common sense and a bachelor's degree. I don't know why we're still discussing this. Everybody that's against SB 21 that I've heard in this and other hearings, I can rebut your comments point by point, but I don't have time. Basic reality is if it costs more to do business in one location than another, you go to the less expensive place and you make more money. If you take the cost of doing business in an Arctic environment combined with our tax structure, not just the oil tax, but also the corporate income tax, it's unprofitable or less profitable to do business here. If I can invest a dollar here and make 10 cents versus invest a dollar somewhere else and make 50 cents, I'm going to go over somewhere else. My kids would love to stay here in Alaska. My son's a junior at East High. Already he's looking other places to pursue a career because he's afraid, as am I, that this economy isn't going to be here. It's going to continue to go down. I don't think you should go down as one of the Senates that presides over decline. Let's get this passed, please. Pass it out of committee, and let's move forward. Fix the economy. Only part of it will be fixed by SB 21, but it's a good place to start. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for joining us, Michael. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Peter Matchy in the Anchorage LAO. Welcome.
My name is Peter Matchy. I'm a 42-year resident of Anchorage. I work in the fabrication business to the oil fields, but I'm testifying for myself at this point. In 2007, when you passed ACES, and I believe it was kind of rammed through as a penance to the oil company for the litigation that was going on with some legislators, I didn't see any big newspaper things that said we're ripping off $2 million or $2 billion, so I'm sorry, $1 to $2 billion is we're getting another big chunk from them. But all the time I read in the paper now, we're giving the money back to them. And I like to think of where that money came from in the first place. Large investments in infrastructure, a lot of jobs for a lot of years, and that's where this money is coming from. So I'm in support of SB 21. The other thing, there's a couple of things in the bill that I gave a portion of the bill. There's a portion that a provision that gives a tax break to manufacturers in this state, and I gave that provision to my boss, and he read it, and he was unsure where that level was. Is that at my level where I make modules or do piping, or is that at the owner's level? Can you answer that for me?
Peter, we don't. You're welcome to call any of the committee members, and they'd be happy to have a dialogue with the manufacturing credit that's being proposed.
Okay. Then you've read it. I guess you don't. All right. That's all. Thanks. I support SB 21.
Thank you so much for calling in. Next, back to Fairbanks, Dirk Nelson. Dirk, are you with us?
I'm here representing myself today. My name is Dirk Nelson. There was numerous references were made earlier. One was to the cost of doing business on the North Slope. And a lot of the numbers I look at are based on net profit, not gross or costs. I suspect that the folks in Scotland with British Petroleum are looking at net profits as well. I'm a little bit aware of international markets as well as markets in North America. I'm aware that last year ConocoPhillips profited roughly $28 per barrel on Alaskan crude, which exceeds their profit, I believe, anywhere else in North America. We haven't really addressed the losses in the past that have been written off that didn't occur in Alaska, but were written off and asserted as costs here. I'm not sure that's addressed in the bill. Governor Parnell has not come out and been willing to debate for his own legislation. He has seemingly been vacant from the stage, as it were, in regard to defending some of what I see as gross weaknesses in this bill. I viewed charts the other day that compared decline in throughput to revenue rates and showed that there was really little correlation between the two. In fact, even when 15 out of 19 fields on the slope were severance tax-free, throughput was already in decline. If this is a revenue-based problem, why were they declining when they were paying zero severance tax, including in Kuparik, which was extremely profitable? BP and Conoco, factually, have not necessarily been forthright in their presentation, either of their position or their finances. There is no forced disclosure. We assume that they're paying a 35% federal tax rate. I've heard people allude to that here just recently in testimony. And yet, they won't show us the books. Why is that? I saw a memo the other day. It was a BP memo from 2004
that discussed Alaska as an excellent source of cash flow, but that they were determined to give 100% of that excess flow back to their investors. That doesn't sound like a commitment to me to reinvest in Alaska. It sounds like a commitment to BP. There is no evidence of SB 21 increasing either throughput or revenues in terms of what the state's total take is. If SB 21 is passed without proper sufficient study, guarantees, and commitment, I will almost guarantee a meaningful effort toward referendum and a lot of questions to be answered by those who supported SB 21, especially in the Novembers to come. I would like
the supporters of SB 21 in Juneau to sign contracts guaranteeing that if it passes, they will not seek employment with the oil producers for 15 years.
Mr. Nelson, thank you for testifying today. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll move over to the Kenai LAO. Michelle Vasquez. Michelle, are you online?
Yes, I am. Thank you. My name is Michelle Vasquez. I'm a 15-year resident of Alaska. I am a legislative research analyst, and I am speaking for myself. I am strongly opposed to SB 21. Bigger tax breaks for oil companies to drill our oil makes no sense. The oil is here. If the companies want it, they will drill for it without additional tax breaks. Drilling for oil is what they do because they have one purpose, and that is to make a profit. And they have made billions upon billions off of the state of Alaska's oil. They do not need an incentive, and I'm using quotations, to do business, to do the business that they are in. We should not give away our oil resources with broader and grander tax breaks. It is not necessary. It takes from other much-needed programs that the tax money goes for, but I won't go there. Leave ACs in place. Thank you very much for your time and a chance to express my opinion.
Ms. Vasquez, thank you for joining us. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll return to Anchorage. Ray Metcalf, followed by Priscilla Simmons. Mr. Metcalf, are you with us?
I am, Madam Chairman.
Madam Chairman,
my name is Ray Metcalf, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I'm also speaking on behalf of an organization called Citizens for Ethical Government. We're the organization that brought complaint after complaint after complaint when Ben Stevens was sitting at the helm of the state Senate, taking $4,000 a month from VECO to usher their legislation through the legislature. We are the people that exposed the VECO's bribery of several people, and as you well know, 11 people went to jail for what they did, and 11 convictions resulted. I don't see anything much different today in what's going on here. When I see a disparity, it doesn't cease to amaze me that I've seen several people get up to this microphone today and testify that it's not profitable, as profitable in Alaska to drill for oil and produce oil as it is elsewhere. ConocoPhillips reported a $29 a barrel profit last year, and there is no place in the world where they make $29 a barrel. Exxon doesn't make $29 a barrel anywhere else in the world, and neither does BP. There are copies of leases sitting on everybody's seat here showing terms for Iraq contracts that BP, Exxon, and Shell have signed in the past 2 years. None of those contracts give them even $2 a barrel. My suggestion that the committee might consider offer British Petroleum 10 times what they make on a barrel of oil in Iraq and see how fast they run, see how fast they come out against it. They don't make that much money anywhere. The point is, I watch over and over and over. The facts are on the table. The people are talking about people exiting to North Dakota. You know, and I know, that that's not true. Someone said we have an 80% take. Well, if ConocoPhillips took $29 a barrel, that just doesn't compute. The North Slope has more employment right now than it's ever had in the history of the state of Alaska. More people employed up there than there's ever been. This state economy is humming along quite well. And when I was in the legislature, by the way, Prudhoe Bay was estimated to run out of oil long before now. So it's been stretched out quite a while. But the one thing I haven't seen anybody address is that the tankers coming back from the West Coast have been coming back with oil still on board because they can't unload it. Unless British Petroleum decides to start shipping across through the Panama Canal, through the pipeline that is adjacent to it, or exporting, they have no place to put that oil. They are currently producing at the rate their market share will consume the oil they refine and distribute. They cannot exceed it without something running over. If you had another 100,000 barrels a day in the pipeline today, they would not have a place to put it. And that is a simple fact. And my point is, this legislature is trying to stick a carrot out in front of them. Every other state in the world that is in the business we're in, they don't ask oil companies to produce. They don't incentivize them. They tell them to produce or get the hell out. If you take a look at the Clarion. The Peninsula Clarion today, there's an article in there and there's links in there you can look at. You can pull up Iraqi contracts from that link. And it shows what the terms of BP's, Exxon, and Shell's leases were with Iraq. And if they don't meet those leases, they are sent packing. And they have a time frame to meet those leases. And until you start acting like owners, they're not going to produce more. They're going to produce enough oil from Prudhoe Bay to meet their market share, and they'll continue doing that if you give them the oil for free.
Mr. Metcalf,
the things that I've heard today that simply aren't true, and this committee knows they aren't true, and I can only think of one reason why a committee would sit there and pretend that those comments were believable. You know for a fact that the North Slope is busier than it's ever been. You know for a fact that that profit margin is bigger. You know for a fact that we are not the highest taxing entity in North America or the world. We are far from it. We are well below international averages. So,
Mr. Metcalf,
And if there's any questions for me, which you probably don't have, I'll let you get on with your hearing.
Mr. Metcalf, thank you for joining us. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Priscilla Simmons, followed by Eli Stein in the Anchorage LIO. Priscilla, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. My name is Priscilla Simmons, and I'm representing myself, and I'm here to talk about jobs. I'm a mechanical and process engineer employed by an oil service company in Anchorage. Last Friday, March 1st, the Anchorage Daily News stated on the front page, oil output continues to surge in the United States. Texas, the number one producer in the country, has doubled its production since 2010. Texas has been in the oil production business for decades prior to TAPS opening in 1977. Why is Texas, and for that matter, North Dakota and Calgary, by the way, I've lost coworkers to both, so I can discredit that previous testimony's comment on that, increasing production. So for that matter, why is Texas increasing production and job opportunities for its residents while Alaska is going further down in its production? Is ACES really trumping our state? Alaskans like myself want more opportunities with oil production. It's hard to believe that our huge Alaska resource base has resulted in around a 26% decline, or almost 200,000 barrels a day of production over the last 5 years. 5 years ago, I was a junior in college, and let me tell you, a college kid pays extreme attention to the job market, and from my very own personal experience, in Alaska, it's also declined. I'm not fine with decline. Let's get Alaska moving again. I just bought a house with a long-term mortgage, and I want to be here for the long term. I want to have kids in this state that grew up like I did, driving out to Portage Glaciers on the weekends and spending my summers in Seward. Texas has many advantages over Alaska. Better weather, I could have bought a much better house for the price I paid here in Anchorage. But please, do not make job opportunities for young professionals one of those reasons. Thank you.
Priscilla, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Eli Stein, followed by Andy Rogers.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Eli Stein. I'm an engineer working in Anchorage for the oil and gas industry, and I'm here representing myself today. I recently moved to Anchorage from Colorado because of the job opportunities that are offered up here in Anchorage. I've lived in Alaska for only 14 months, which is not enough to receive my first PFD check that I'm looking forward to, but it's been long enough to see that we do have problems with our local oil and gas industry. The problems that I'm referring to are the decrease of investment and production of oil and gas in the state of Alaska. Over the last 5 years, we've seen a loss of 25% of the oil production. Now, I'm just an engineer. I have no in-depth knowledge of government financing or tax structures, but I do know that I love to live in Alaska, as I'm sure you all do as well. I understand that part of what allows Alaska to be such a great place is our government tax revenue from oil production. I get it. We need to make sure that Alaska and its citizens gets our fair share, while at the same time, though, creating an environment that provides competitive opportunities for new investment in the oil and gas industry. Since I moved to Alaska, I've gotten married, I've bought a house, and I've started to build my life here. However, with the decline in oil production that we have seen over the past several years, I'm worried that my future as an Alaskan citizen is endangered. I really don't want to move to Texas or North Dakota. Sure, the housing is cheaper there, but I'd be missing out on a lot of the great, wonderful opportunities that Alaska offers. And that's something that I really don't want to miss out on. I want to continue to live in Alaska, and I want to be able to share that with my children. But I'm worried that that may not be possible if something is not done to encourage more oil and gas production in the state. Like I said earlier, I'm just an engineer, and I don't have a solution to this problem, but I do know that we cannot continue down the path that we are all currently on. Thank you very much.
Eli, thank you for joining us, and welcome to Alaska. Are there questions from committee members? Andy Rogers in the Anchorage LIO, and then we'll move off-net again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Andy Rogers. I'm a lifelong Alaskan living in Anchorage, Alaska now, originally from Palmer. I'm speaking today representing myself and my family. Speaking in support of SB 21, I was hoping for a better bill, a strong one, one that made us a little bit more competitive. Maybe we'll still get that. But we'll speak in support of the bill in its current format. That was going to be my only comment until those last two testimonies. They make this kind of a bittersweet hearing for me. It's sweet in that we have young people involved in our public process, but it's a little bitter in that they have to be. We have, you know, 20-year-olds showing up with the same jaded or cynical concerns that those of us in our 40s and over have, worrying about our kids being able to get the educations that they want and have the job opportunities that we want available for them to keep them here. We had two that I heard, Alaskan employers, state on the record in testimony today that they are taking their employees and their companies and doing business in other states. That's a harsh thing to hear as a business professional who spent most of my life importing educated Alaskans into this state. I encourage you guys to improve this bill if you can, pass it out of committee, and encourage your fellow senators to support it on the floor. Thank you for the time.
Andy, thank you for joining us today. Are there questions from committee members? For those of you waiting in Anchorage, we should be back to you shortly. Just want to make sure that everyone who's been waiting in line across the state is being brought in when they showed up at the LIOs. Next, we'll return to Juneau, Valerie Brooks. Valerie, if you could approach. I'm going to go ahead and take Kenai's testimony first, and then we'll be right back to Juneau. In the Kenai LIO, Bill Warren.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can. Your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, good chairperson there, Representative Anna Faircroft, and the good committee there. I am Bill Warren. I'm a 61-year resident. I reside in Nikiski. There's four generations of us Warrens here, and I'm speaking against SB 21, and I'm for tweaking ACEs. I think there's a lot of drama here today. My father raised us kids up here back in the 50s and late 40s, and I've been working here for decades. I'm retired now. My son's in the building trades. He's working. He's got two children, my grandkids. We're not going anywhere. And this is a lot of fear-based stuff because we have high points in Alaska and low points, and it cycles out. And I've made a really good look living here, Cook Inlet. You know, we had the big producers fired up, and then as it went down, now they've left. We closed down the LNG plant here a couple days ago. So we're down on our luck here. But, you know, same as with Prudhoe, the legacy fields, you know, you pour water out of a bucket and pretty soon it's depleted. And we've all made a huge amount of money off the legacy fields. And we're going to continue to do so. And as far as the big three there, if they want to drill deeper, let them drill. If they want to go laterally with the new tech, let them. They're sitting there with all the infrastructure. Everything's laid out for them to just get busy and produce some more oil. And the independence is what's going to save us. I kind of like what the Senate said last year. I don't agree with everything they did, but they did say we can probably run the ranch here for 100 years on 100 to 200,000 barrels of oil, because the medium-sized guys will pick up the pace here. There's money to be made. We really can't compete with Dakota now or Texas. We're a different league. And, you know, for the people that are fear-based, they don't have to worry. This is Alaska. It's always treated us all well and will continue doing so. As strange as it seems, we probably will get some money being made on natural gas if you guys will do your work. Ha-ha. And so I don't know. You haven't even broached the some of the things you'd like to get out of the big three for this. And I would say local hire would be a wonderful place. Us guys that live close to the street here, we get reports every day from our brothers and sisters coming back from the slope, and it's filthful out-of-state workers, and you can't do the statistics speak for themselves. So there's a lot of work to be done for us Alaskans, and let's quit the fear and the drama and go forward in this great state. I think the progressivity was set, the high part was set during a period of corruption and a lot of confugility. And we don't need to be running around in circles, changing our oil policies every 3 years or 4 years. We're going to lose all credibility with everybody. So I'm glad you let me testify here today, and I've got a long perspective, 60 years here in this state. And we've earned and raised families and kids. My kids are out there working now in the real world, making money at the building trades. And my grandkids are going to grow up, and they're not going to move to Texas or California, I'll guarantee you. This is our spirit land. And let's just put up with a little uncertainty and nervousness and just go forward. The big oil companies will leave here. When Prudhoe Bay is dried up, they're gone. They require big jobs. And that's not the end of the world. The independents will come in and take that place and make us a good living, just like's happening in Cook Inlet. Cook Inlet's not done, and we're having a bad transition time. But
Mr. Warren,
we got to have faith. And I talked too long, but I'll be glad to answer any questions. Thank you,
Mr. Warren. We really appreciate you waiting to speak with us. Are there questions from committee members? There's not. Have a great day and enjoy your family.
Thank you.
Here in Juneau, we have Valerie Brooks. Valerie, if you would put your name on the record and any affiliation.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Valerie Brooks. I'm an elementary school reading specialist and a 25-year educator in the state. and these comments are my own views in opposition to SB 21. Alaskans need education. The oil industry in this state has provided and does provide income for many, but education provides a service for all. Educators prepare Alaskan students to contribute to the society and culture of this state and of this nation. Educators in Alaska guide, nurture, instruct, and support the education of all students. These students have not seen an increase in the base student allocation of funds for public education for 3 going on 4 years, if it does not increase again now. Contrast with that the fact that the lack of increase to student funding stands in stark contrast to the profits of one oil company operating in Alaska, which several years ago was $11.9 billion. The money that the proposed tax incentives would grant big oil companies could be better used to maintain and to improve the state of the public education system in the state of Alaska to the benefit of all Alaskan students and citizens. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Are there questions from committee members? Valerie, thank you for waiting here in Juneau today. Heading back to the Anchorage LIO for a bit, Reed Christensen, followed by Jeff Acton. Reed, are you with us?
Yes, thank you.
Welcome.
For the record, my name is Reed Christensen. I work for Dahlenbach Corporation, a local manufacturing company that makes products such as wellhead safety systems, chemical injection skids, and electrical industrial control panels for use up on the North Slope. We desperately need to make Alaska's oil and gas climate more competitive. SB 21 is a step in the right direction. I personally think this bill does not go far enough, but it is a step in the right direction. Our business is down over 40% since ACES was passed, and the alarming downward trends have the appearance of continuing. This is due in large part to the fiscal environment created by the ACES legislation. Companies can get a better return on their investment in other areas of the world besides Alaska. These companies are voting with their investment dollars, and they're voting for these other venues. The project horizon on state lands in Alaska looks pretty bleak. We need more private sector jobs and investment. We need more oil in the pipeline. We cannot afford to wait. Taking more money from the producers and putting the money into the state treasury does not help our economy in the long term. There is not a state savings account big enough to fill the void from a dead oil and gas industry. There are not enough people or jobs to be taxed to replace the revenue from production. The pipeline is two-thirds empty right now and continues to decline. ACES is accelerating the decline and bringing the eventual shutdown date much closer. It needs to be fixed as soon as possible. The effects are already being felt and will continue to ripple throughout the state economy, affecting other areas that currently seem to feel a false sense of security today. Areas such as state jobs, public services, education, charities, and construction, just to name a few. Please keep the ball rolling. Thanks for the work you've done thus far. It truly is the most important subject of this current legislative session. Please fix ACES, and then we can move on to the state fiscal plan. Thank you.
Reed, thank you for joining us. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Jeff Acton, followed by Val Hanley in the Anchorage LIO.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity to express my views concerning improvement of the business environment through modifications to ACES that's being offered by House Bill 21. My name is Jeff Acton. I've been in the industry for 35 years. 20 years we're on the North Slope. One of my biggest moments was us standing in the control room when we hit 2.2 million barrels going down the pipeline. Needless to say, those were some exciting times. We had major capital projects. It was hustle and bustle and get things done. In the recent years, the oil field environment in North Dakota, Texas, Gulf of Mexico is very, very similar to what I experienced back when we were at 2.2 million barrels. Huge projects, billions of dollars, thousands of jobs. It is interesting to me that the ACE's tax structure has coincided with the steady decline in production and also with leading to fewer capital projects. Today, the reality is we're competing in all corners of the world. We're competing in all corners of the U.S. The interesting thing for me, having had the opportunity to be in these other areas in the U.S., is that the discussion is very, very different in regards to taxation and governing policies. They're not focused on short term. They're not focused on tax gimmicks. Their tax regimes have been in place for years and years. Their biggest concern is how can they help improve the business environment? They are assisting industry in all directions versus targeting of different types of production. Without adopting governing and tax policies that promote the overall development of resources, my fear is the decline in Alaska will continue. So I request your support to provide some meaningful change in the form of the House Bill 21. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Val Hanley, followed by Maynard Tapp in the Anchorage LIO. Val, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. My name is Val Hanley. I work for an oil field system business here in Anchorage and Alaska. And I am here to talk about jobs. My main job for this oil field company is human resources. And many employees that are on standby are asking when our company is going to open up more positions in our Texas branch and when we're going to finally go to the Dakotas. And I don't know about you, but I'm tired of hearing about North Dakota and Texas. The company I work for considers itself to be an Alaskan company. It's been here since the 70s. Our board members decided to wait and listen to the governor promising to do something about bringing more production to Alaska's oil fields and promising to get ACEs fixed. With decline from our economy hitting home, our business couldn't wait any longer. In 2013, it came along, and now we're getting more contracts in Texas. And we're also looking at contracts in the Dakotas. Our previous employees and some of our current employees that are on standby are in line to get to that to get to the work down there. We're sending them to the projects that we now have, but at the same time, they say, when you get more work back home, let me know so I can be back in Alaska. So please make 2013 the year that we get more work here at home and fix ACEs so we as private business can hire for projects here at home to get our economy going again. Thank you for your time.
Val, thank you for waiting, and we appreciate your testimony. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Maynard Tapp. Maynard, are you in the Anchorage LIO?
Yes. My name is Maynard Tapp. I'm representing myself. I'm a partner in small business that, like the state, depends approximately 90% of its revenues from the Alaskan oil and gas industry. I'm thinking about keeping it simple in Senate Bill 21. I think it has been made abundantly clear that the biggest difficulty with the ACEs was progressivity. I'm afraid it may be too difficult to fix ACEs in one bill. Consider the possibility of splitting Senate Bill 21 into two pieces. One piece is to get rid of progressivity. The second piece is fix everything else. I'm not sure that the whole elephant could be eaten with one bite, so why can't we break it into pieces that can be more readily or easily digested? It's been stated that Libya and the other Mideastern countries that tax at the 90% level are our competitors. This is not true. It's Canada, Gulf of Mexico, and North Dakota. It has been proven that money taken from the oil companies in the form of taxes has impacted investment for new production. I don't know of any dollars that the state of Alaska has taken from the oil companies that's gone into drilling or gone into new production for oil. So we're eating our seed corn and killing the golden goose. Let's make it simple to increase production sent through taps from the state of Alaska and oil fields. One, eliminate progressivity. Not $1 taxes has gone to new state taxes have gone to new production. 50-50 seems fair enough to me in terms of total government take. They get half, we get half. It seems like a fair deal. First level production to 600,000 barrels per day. Find out what tax incentive that takes to get it there, and then limit spending based on $100 barrel of oil to that revenue that comes in. We've got to get control of the get confidence from the oil companies that they can invest here without being constantly being retaxed to death. We need to settle on a simple, straight formula for the budget that we can rely on and then not go over it. If you could then raise the production to a million barrels a day, we could take the excess revenues and put it into a budget reserve of some sort. So keep it simple. Eliminate progressivity, and let's do everything we can to keep the oil industry healthy for the next 50 years. I did want to say a couple other things based on comments that I heard today. It's been brought up that we're spending more money in capital expenditures. Well, the IRS has laws. If you spend anything over $2,400 and it's not an exact replacement, it's considered a capital expenditure. So these types of sayings, simple sayings, are not helpful to the true discussion of what's happening. We've got a 30-year-old plant, and it's producing mostly water, and many of the capital investments that they're making now is to handle that water so they can continue to handle the oil for us. So thank you for the opportunity, and thanks for the good work you guys do.
Maynard, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll be back to Anchorage in a bit. We're going to take a tour around the state. Is there anyone here in Juneau that wishing to testify? Anyone in Juneau? Heading up to Fairbanks, Bernie Hoffman. Bernie, are you online with us?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
We can. Your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Bernie Hoffman. I represent myself. And thank you for your precious time. Like you, I've been listening to the testimony given on SB 21 via gavel to gavel. I am speaking against SB 21. And my take is that more time is needed to analyze this bill. Number one, the audits on ACEs haven't been done yet, and I think that needs to be done so that we can know where we're at in terms of if it's working or not. And so like me, if I don't like checks for my checking account unless I know what I have there. So I think that we've got to know what we have. Good data will lead to good decisions. The next point is that I've heard the big oil companies testify that they think that SB 21 is a good start, and that sounds to me like they would like a lot more to be given to them to incentivize what we really want them to do. Also, it appears to me that ACES is working, and we have billions of dollars now in our savings account, and I want to give a thank you out to Governor Bloom for that. Also, I think that I think of our oil as money in a piggy bank, and that we shouldn't give it away unless we have thorough research and, once again, good, unbiased data to make decisions with. I would suggest that the legislators, if they want to give away one-half to three-quarters of $1 billion, let's look at renewable energy and renewable resources, like the peony industry that was suggested here in Fairbanks at the Saturday meeting that the senators gave in Fairbanks. We've got other diversification that we could use in the state because we do need to get off of oil, and we need to diversify. My fear is that if SB 21 goes through, Alaskans' needs and the things that we've come to expect from the state, you know, like good education and the other good things that are done for us, will be impacted, and we'll be looking at a future state income tax. And lastly, I think Furthermore, more time is needed to address this issue, and I think we should also talk about getting back to the 120-day days that we used to have in session to give the public more time to give input on these issues, especially this one. Thank you again for your time. I appreciate it, and all the good work that you do.
Bernie,
great day.
Have a great day, Bernie. Thank you for joining us. Are there questions from committee members? Off net, we have Peter Stokes. Peter, are you still there?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator of the Finance Committee. My name is Pete Stokes. I'm a professional petroleum engineer working in Alaska, in Anchorage, and I'm testifying on behalf of myself, my wife, and the future of my three kids who work in Anchorage, and my two grandsons who I'd like to have a future in Alaska. Thank you for your service and for letting me and others of the public testify on this important piece of oil tax reform that's needed to increase investment and new production in Alaska. I support the governor's concepts to make Alaska more competitive in through SB 21 and now through the committee substitute, that it will allow new investments and increase production from the Alaska North Slope. And I urge the passage of this legislation to happen this term. In 2007, ACES was passed, and it resulted in extracting much higher taxes from the oil companies. At these high tax rates, we've all seen that the state made it very uncompetitive for attracting new investment, especially in higher oil prices, and thus have increased annual declines for the pipeline. The committee substitute for this bill is a very good start to achieve new investments, especially the elimination of progressivity, but I would suggest from reviewing some of the previous testimony that we ought to design a tax rate with revenue exclusions and credits to allow for a constant 60 to 63% government take for all price ranges to make Alaska investments not only competitive but attractive. I think PSC Energy and Roger Marks can work with Econ One and the Departments of Revenue and Natural Resources to design this system. I've seen some very good work already from all of those folks. I would like to be sure and incentivize development for new production within existing PAs that won't be recovered unless you spend these new investments. The existing PAs are the areas where you can bring the quickest and largest increases in new production in the short term. And thirdly, keep exploration credit modifications in place that allows new explorers to continue to explore. In summary, I applaud you for all your efforts to allow Alaska to become more competitive investments for new oil production for both explorers and existing producers. Without new exploration and the continued development of new production within the existing PAs, the efforts to lower or flatten production decline will not occur. Madam Chair and Senators, thank you again for all your efforts.
Pete, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Heading to the Kenai LIO, William Warren. William, are you with us? Followed by James Price.
This is James Price. Mr. Warren has testified previously.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, well, my name is James Price. I reside in Nikiski, and I'm here representing myself. I oppose Senate Bill 28. I do support ACES, and I would like to remind the committee that before ACES, we had ELF, and ELF was justified by claiming that the big producers up on the slope were economically disadvantaged. I'd like to remind them that while they were economically disadvantaged, they were gaining billions of dollars in profit. So I think that ACES was good legislation, and I think SB 21 is just rationing us back into being subservient, as we are the owners of the oil that's not actually owned by BP. BP produces oil in Iraq and has signed agreements to do so for $2 a barrel profit. Currently, BP is gaining over $28 a barrel profit. That's 14 times more profitable than Iraq, and they want to be in Iraq. So why don't they want to be in Alaska? I think we're being held up. I think our problem is that we don't have adequate access to the fields by independents and smaller operators, and I question whether they have access to distribution through the pipeline. I think if you want to do something, these are the issues that you need to address, not giving them more money. I think their corporate position has increased from about 13th up to about the first or second highest. So they're doing quite well. Basically, support Alaskans and represent Alaska, please. I just don't see where this is going to do anything to benefit Alaskans. I've worked on this slope for many years, and there's more than 50% of the people that are working up there aren't from Alaska. I think there are issues. I think there are problems. But I don't think the problems are going to be solved by giving Alaskan profit to the producers. That's pretty much it for me, and I appreciate your consideration, and I would very seriously I'd like for you to try to look at both sides of the issue. Look at the Woods McKenzie studies. Look at science. Look at fact, and oppose Senate Bill 21. Thank you.
James, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, we'll return to Anchorage. Ben Moore, followed by Nick Pepperworth. Ben, are you with us in Anchorage?
Yes, I was back of the room. Madam Chair and the committee, thank you very much for having us here today. My name is Ben Moore, spelled M-O-H-R. I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to hear us on this and testify in support of the governor's stated principles that as we look to revise ACEs, it's got to be fair, it's got to be durable, and it's got to encourage production. I wish I had time to talk a little bit more about how this isn't just how we use our resources isn't just like we're missing out on it. We're the owners of the resource, absolutely, but just the way George Steinbrenner used to own the Yankees, he didn't get down there and play the game. He had to pay the best players in order to maximize his returns. The same thing here. We've got to be willing to put out a little bit more so that we can have the best players come and maximize the returns to the state. And right now, ACES doesn't do that. It puts us as a cut-rate ball team. I'm troubled by the state of our resource management going into the future. The whole idea of getting what you can while you can, it's short-sighted, it's unsustainable, and it's just not a good philosophy to operate by. The lower 48's been booming, and we continue this slow descent, and I'm just going to continue to mix metaphors here, but we're continuing to manage this like we're on life support. And it's no way to run a good business, and it's certainly no way to run the greatest state in the nation. We can't continue to do this. I'm not an oil tax expert. You guys have heard from plenty of oil tax experts. But I would encourage the committee to do something. The decline rate that we're looking at and just the lack of competitiveness, we're giving people every reason to go away. And I don't think that's a good thing. And I would just like to address some testimony that I heard earlier today. You can tell a lot by the company folks keep, and I heard testimony from a friend that represents Cook Inlet Keeper and testifying against this bill. That's an environmental organization that's tried to shut down oil and gas development in Cook Inlet for decades. And if this is a bill that they want to stop, it's probably a bill I support. Thanks.
Mr. Moore, thank you for joining us. Next up, Nick Pepperworth. Nick, are you with us? Followed by Mary Nunavik.
Yes, I am here today, and I just want to thank the committee for hearing the concerns on S. Bill 21. It seems that some people don't even know the number. Anyways, I came here in 1981 because there was no work in the state of Washington. and I've been here pretty much ever since. And I don't want to be the last person here. I'm a licensed mechanical administrator for the state of Alaska, and I have licenses in two other states. I'm fortunate. I was hired by Udelhoven Oilfield System Services in 1990, and I've heard some stuff over the years. I'm just basically a dumber plumber, but I've heard some stuff. I was here when oil was $14 a barrel, and I was in a meeting that Tony Knowles was in, and I heard people say there was no decline in 99. And some of you have been around that long. We've had decline. I was hired in 1990 as part of a diversification plan, so the company I was working for would not be dependent upon solely upon the oil field work, and we could have other work. And we were successful in that, and we've become a force to be reckoned with in the commercial work here in the city of Anchorage, doing several large commercial projects, both new high schools, the forensic examiner's lab, the new crime lab, and currently we're doing the UA sports arena. And I don't believe that the state of Alaska has the opportunity to diversify. Where are you going to go if you can't get this right? Where are you going to go if we don't get oil? Oil drives it all. Oil drives the budget that the young lady was talking about for school. And we work on a lot of school projects. And there is no new school projects being built. There hasn't really been anything but projects that are maintenance in the last few years because there's no money. There's no money right now. That's not going to change. It's only going to get worse. The military, it's my job to have my finger on the pulse of what the commercial work's doing in this state. And the military in 2013 and 2014 is not spending money. There's no budget. There's no money. I think the key to this is that people listen to the governor and follow his four principles. They're fair. I'll read them to you. I'm sure you've heard it. Tax reform must be fair, must encourage new production, must be simple so that it restores balance. Tax reform has to be durable for the long term. I've been to North Dakota recently, and I've seen what it's supposed to look like when there's people that are working. The infrastructure can't keep up with all of the work that's going on there, all the oil. They're drilling everywhere you can see. There's no new production that I know of wells that are being drilled currently in the North Slope. They're doing a lot of maintenance up there, and we're part of some of that. But we could have so much going on in this state, but I think we're responsible. We're cutting our own throats. We need to open this thing up, get it going, and get it moving. Otherwise, it's a fast road to where we're headed, and the recession is just catching up here. We've kind of missed it all, but it's just catching up, and if this is the last straw, I believe, so it doesn't hit here. And talk about jobs. They're actually, in some of these places, they're offering more money to work per hour for, craft people.
Nick?
And we are in the state of Alaska on the frozen North Slope.
Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Mary Nunavik, followed by Cesar Martinson.
Yes, my name is Mary Nunavik. I want the House bill, nor the Senate bill numbers, because you have those at hand. And although a person's name should never make a difference, whether or not a person is hurt. It seems that everyone's excuse, be you an individual, a CEO of some entity, a legislative person, a president of this and that, everybody's excuse always seems to be, well, I'm not a rocket scientist. Let me tell you, it does not take a rocket scientist to get things done and rolling. And oil seems to, well, it doesn't seem to, oil affects every aspect of our lives, from education to health care to behavioral health to mental health, to behavioral health, to sexual abuse, to child abuse, and prejudices, biases, and et cetera, et cetera. I don't have time, so I'm saying et cetera, et cetera. And then when it comes to education, I always push that education is where it says what more likely work than anything else. And just if I'm tired of hearing the excuse, well, we don't touch this subject unless a person is in high school or if a person is in college or grad school, that's, pardon me, BS. And education should start even before preschool for things to stick with a person for the rest of their lives. And the younger we learn something, it doesn't, whatever we learn does not leave us. It sticks with us for the rest of our lives. And then, rather than always pointing out our differences, be it culture, race, religion, sex, whatever else, those should never stand in the way, because those are impediments to progress. And another thing that I constantly say over and over again, ever since I was a youngster, when I started following up the legislative sessions via the radio, is that, like, I swear, majority of the things that are still discussed today and not solved are the same old, same old. And why is that? And I can... There was a testifier yesterday who testified against Fred Dyson, and I really felt, I've been feeling what he felt ever since I was a youngster. And he did not mean to offend Mr. Dyson because of his views and what he stands for, but it's just that we get impatient for things to get rolling and solved. Can anyone understand that? And then whatever background we come from, we all should work together. And then like immigrants to Alaska are forever claiming that this piece of land is their land, but that's not true. The whole of Alaska belongs primarily and first of all to the indigenous people. And in our kindness, we've allowed you to come here and mess it up with rules and laws and regulations. And those rules and laws and regulations that you propose year after year after year are for your own personal interest. If you have a holding, a deed, in this oil field, you push for it.
Mary.
And it doesn't matter whether you're doing it in a wrong way.
Mary.
And often like...
Mary.
Well, these stupid native, they don't know anything. They don't know how to plant. They're dumb. They don't plant. But let me tell you, the native people from all over the world are the smartest people in the world because they do not keep what they learn to their own selfish interests. We share knowledge with the rest of the world to solve problems, to get along, be it in health, be it in whatever.
Mary?
Thank you.
We thank you so much for coming out and testifying today. There are others that are still waiting, and we appreciate you taking the time to come out. Are there questions from committee members? Cesar Martinson, I've been told, is offline now, but I just want to extend that one more time. Cesar Martinson? If not, Nick Moe in Anchorage. Nick, are you with us?
I am.
Your name and affiliation for the record.
I'm a third-generation Alaskan. My grandparents came up here in the late 1940s. And I must say, I also agree with the governor's principles, but I certainly don't agree with this approach, and I don't agree with Senate Bill 21. Touching on what some of the previous speakers said, Alaska needs infrastructure. My grandpa likes to say that we're a young state. We only have one road. I really think that we should take the opportunity to invest our oil wealth to grow our state into long-term infrastructure projects that, diversify our economy as well. I've heard some speakers mention that, we need to look at this like a business, and I agree as well. I think that for every dollar that we give away with this bill, we should demand more than a dollar back. It should be an investment, and we should have the complete picture, and I think this committee should have the complete picture before making a decision on this legislation. We should have a complete audit for ACES to know where we stand. And I didn't really realize this until I heard some of the other speakers mention it, but really, to make this decision without an audit, I think is pretty remarkable. And I also think it would be very beneficial to have a complete assessment of what oil resources Alaska has. We should know what we're working with so we can plan out our long-term future and make informed decisions. And, I must say, I appreciate that we have the pipeline and that we have the oil companies, and I appreciate everything they've done for our state. And I agree it's in our best interest to fill the pipeline as well. I attended UAA. I went to high school here. And, I don't fault the folks here for advocating for this bill, but it's their job to make a hard bargain and try to maximize the profits they can out of Alaska. It's their job. And it's our job as Alaskans, and it's your job as legislators, to make sure that you keep in mind the best interest for our whole state, to make sure that we look after the long-term interests, to push back and ask the tough questions here. And I don't see this legislative process reflect that. I think that this has been rushed, and I think that if you have 2 years to pass this bill, you should really take a strong look and examine exactly some more of the details that might remain. So I think I'll leave it there, but I really do think that we should have a complete audit that before this Senate Bill 21 is passed out. And just to touch on jobs, we should really look at diversifying Alaska's economy. If we're trying to run the state like a business, we should make sure that we have more than all our eggs in one basket. We should fully invest in renewable energy and energy efficiency in this state. Alaskans shouldn't be paying the highest energy costs in the country for the amount of resources that we have here, especially in Fairbanks. So I encourage this committee to look holistically at the challenges Alaska has and make an informed decision to vote no right now on moving this Senate Bill 21 out of committee.
Nick, thank you for your testimony. We're going to take another lap around the state. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Judy Patrick. Judy, you've been waiting patiently online at MATSU. Welcome to the Senate Finance Committee and the hearing on Senate Bill 21.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I just wanted to thank the committee for this opportunity to speak and to say that I support the governor's proposed changes. I don't think that we can continue with ACES as it is right now. I think the goal is to get more oil in the pipe, and you don't get that with a punitive tax structure like we have right now. I also don't think that we can wait for another legislative session. New projects take a long time to sanction, and I think that the state needs to realize and the legislature needs to realize that for every year that we delay any meaningful reform in our tax structure, that could mean several years of delays for new projects. And I think the idea here is to put more oil into the pipeline and not to continue to tax our resources to death. And as a result, we won't be taxing something, we won't be taxing anything, there won't be any oil in the pipe eventually. So I just wanted to say that I agree with Governor Parnell's proposed changes. I personally don't want to see any progressivity included in the tax bill. I think that's been a real deal breaker for the oil industry on the existing ACEs. And I don't think ACEs is working. And I'm glad that it's getting looked at, and I would just encourage the committee to pass something this legislative session, and I thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us, Judy. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, returning to Anchorage, Lori Fanati, followed by Marlena Hall. Marliana Hall. Sorry, Marliana.
Good afternoon. My name is Lori Fagnani. And as the owner of a communications and advertising firm here in Anchorage, you might wonder why I'm here to talk with you about changing ACEs. It's because I employ 24 full-time graphic designers, web developers, account planners who need me to advocate on their behalf to secure their futures in Alaska. Since oil started flowing in the pipeline, oil production levels have been directly tied to good-paying jobs in the oil and gas industry. And similarly, almost all state revenues are tied to oil production. I'm here today because my employees understand this connection. They see their futures are tied to production levels in the pipeline. My company is one of those that are indirectly reliant on oil and gas industry. A large percentage of our revenues come from the industry, and the decisions you make today impact not only my employees' livelihoods, but the future of the state. My next point is one of competitiveness. I operate in a very competitive marketplace. Every single day, I worry about my competitiveness. Do I have the right staff? Do I have the right products? Am I going to win the next piece of business? If the answer is no, or if I sense that I'm losing market share, then I change my strategy. I maneuver myself into a more competitive position because that's how the marketplace works. As much as I want my client relationships to be based solely on delivering the best possible product, for some clients, it's about price. And if they get less, if they can get it less expensive someplace else, then they're going to move their business. This is how the market works, and it's up to me to decide what business I want to go after, what business I want to invest to keep, and just like you, spending royalty revenues, which are generated by our legacy fields, I've made commitments to my family and to my employees that they can count on me to fund their future. It's my responsibility to maneuver my company so that I remain competitive and attractive to new clients, and to attract new investment from my existing clients. Alaska has a pricing problem, and changing ACEs is a step in the right direction to increasing production. It appears quite clear to me that Alaska has lost its competitive position in a global playing field, and it's time to get off the sidelines and get back into the game. Change ACEs so that we can compete and win. Alaska's future depends on action now. I really do appreciate your time today and for this opportunity to share my thoughts.
Lori, thank you for joining us and waiting this afternoon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, Marliana Hall.
Hi. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of this committee. My name is Marliana Hall, and I'm testifying on behalf of myself. I was born, raised, and have lived in Alaska my entire life. I went to school here, I have a family here, and I have a job here for now. I was educated in public schools in Nome and in Eagle River, and I attended and received my bachelor's degree from UAA. Now my son attends public school. His current education is subsidized by the taxes paid by the oil industry. His future education will be subsidized by his permanent fund dividend, a royalty from oil production. I can only hope that when he's my age and older, his housing, food, and lifestyle, including enjoying Alaska's great outdoors, hunting, fishing, and more, is subsidized by a well-paying job in our great state with a healthy economy. Please end progressivity and encourage investment in the future development of Alaska's natural resources. I think SB 21 is a start, but more needs to be done. I encourage you to pass it out of your committee and continue to work to increase investment in Alaska. We need to keep the doors open of our locally owned businesses. I hope you consider the long term over the short term, and I thank you all for hearing us out today. Thank you, Senators.
Thank you, Marliana. Is there questions from committee members? Next, Phyllis Spencer-Blitz. Phyllis, are you there?
Here.
Welcome.
Yeah, just for the record, that's Phyllis Spencer Bell, Bravo Echo Lima Zulu, BELZ. And thank you very, very much for letting me testify, as well as the others. On this, you know, I've done this three times on this same bill, and I really, you know, I'm up in the air on this, because let me tell you why. Ivana Inupiat, Ivana Samaruna, I am Inupiat, I'm a member of the tribe of Barrow, Alaska. That tribe has been in that region for longer than statehood and far longer than oil production. We barely get any money from there. The one oil field we do get money in, we have to give 70% of our revenue out to the other native corporations who don't even let their kids have shares. They don't take care of their elders, and they don't have any jobs. They're corrupted, and I don't want to give them any more money unless they start taking care of their subsidies. And what did she just say? I'm sorry. If they take care of if her kid has a share, then perhaps his dividend will pay for the education. Okay, and then there's too many dead homeless natives in Anchorage, Alaska. Have you seen how many dead homeless natives there are with no disability or dividends? That oil comes from Inupiat land. And if we're supposed to pay it out to everybody else, then there shouldn't be any dead homeless, drunk or not. They can finance their own lifestyle and live someplace even half decent. And the three of the native corporations in the state of Alaska are the largest private landowners in the entire nation. That means that they, you know, and us, that we can do other things. There's other businesses they can do. We don't have to keep shelling out all of our resource money to them to not give to their kids or their elders. And I'm all for oil production as long as it's fair. It is not fair. That oil is not ours of Alaska. Half these people aren't even from here. That oil is from the Inupiat tribal region. It is from the Arctic Slope region. It is not from Lana. It is not from Bristol. It is not from any of the other ones that don't even take care of their shareholders or future could be. Already a lot of the 40-year shareholders. And I'm really also the state of Alaska doesn't enforce any Internal Welfare Act or tribal cultures or any sort of education there. We're just like a melting pot of simulation, low-quality, bush, rural and urban schools, and there's a lack of native job hire, native job training, and native job respect. And so I'm tired of this, and I don't mind delaying this until kingdom come, until you people realize it's a Inupiat oil. That's a Inupiat land. And I'm tired of hearing it and seeing all these people die by your hand, by not helping them with disabilities, and the alcohol, the cessation, and everything else. These people are products of the boarding schools. They were forced into boarding schools and forced into sexual slavery. There were all sorts of abuses, forced to speak English, taken away from their cultures, their tribes, their parents, and the generational abuse issues have gone on to create more dead and selfish people who don't even know how to manage their own tribes properly. Mine is a role model for everybody else. If it weren't for Arctic Slope Regional Corporation and the people there, there would be no oil development in the state of Alaska, period. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Thank you for your testimony, Phyllis. Are there questions from committee members? Is there anyone else in the Anchorage LIO that wishes to testify on SB 21? Is there anyone in the Fairbanks LIO that wishes to testify on SB 21? Is there anyone else in the Kenai LIO that wishes to testify on SB 21? Anyone off net? Anyone in Juneau? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed on SB 21. What's the will of the committee? Any comments? With that, Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, I appreciate everyone's time today around the state that took the time to go to their LIOs and vet their concerns, and they are, for the most part, pretty consistent. I think everybody recognizes, for the most part, that something needs to be done. There are some that think that ACES is currently working, but the you know, a good takeaway for me is, for me, and I think it was not lost on the rest of the committee, is The common theme seemed to be we need to broaden our economy and diversify our energy portfolio and look at renewables and broaden our infrastructure in the state to diversify our economy. So I just want everybody to know that your comments were taken to heart, and thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Any other comments? With that, the committee's adjourned.